The legislature is in the last month of the session, and there's a lot of work to get done. The budget is the priority, so how's it going? I'm Lori Townsend. What will lawmakers insist on funding, and what will they cut? What is the right formula to reduce a huge deficit without crumbling the economy? Should Medicaid expansion be part of the deal? Everyone has ideas, but lawmakers and the governor must have consensus to achieve stability and move forward. Democratic Senator Berta Gardner and Republican Representative Steve Thompson are the guests today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The MBA program at Alaska Pacific University offers working professionals courses designed to fit their busy lifestyles. With hybrid online and in-person classes, the MBA at APU is an accelerated, affordable, and high-quality pathway to career advancement. Learn more by calling 800-252-7528 or visiting alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. We're continuing our discussion on the state budget today. You can join us at 1-800-478-8255 or locally 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Republican Representative Steve Thompson is with us from the studio at KTOO in Juneau. Welcome.
Thank you, Lori. Very pleased to be here with you today.
Thank you so much for being on. And Democratic Senator Berta Gardner is also on the phone from the Capitol in Juneau. Hello.
Good morning, and thank you very much for the program and for inviting us to participate.
Thanks. I know you're both extremely busy right now, and so I appreciate your time. Let's start with Medicaid. This has been a point of contention between lawmakers and the governor. Last week, Governor Walker was on Talk of Alaska, and that day he released his plan for Medicaid expansion and reform. There's been some other developments now with efforts to meld perhaps some bills together. What do you think of the governor's proposal as it was put forward?
Well, I guess I'll take that. I'm not convinced that legislation is necessary to implement Medicaid expansion, but that's what legislative leadership wanted, and the governor is willing to kind of go along with that. But in terms of Medicaid expansion properly, it is in a time of $3.5 billion deficit savings. He's been able to identify hundreds of millions of dollars immediately and in the long term, $6.1 million in the first year, up to $330 million in 6 years of savings to the state. In Arkansas, they've seen similar numbers, $300 million saved over 6 years, and in Kentucky, $800 million. So Medicaid expansion not only can save lives immediately and improve the health of thousands of Alaskans, but several independent studies have shown 4,000 new jobs and $1 billion of new economic activity in Alaska. So, you know, to me, it seems like a no-brainer. Hospitals pay lots, millions of dollars in uncompensated care for people who don't have insurance, and those costs are passed along to all of us. So I'm going to say I support the governor's bill, and I support his effort to expand Medicaid in Alaska.
Representative Thompson, I have a feeling you have a different idea about this. Let's hear your thoughts.
Well, I really felt that that having it just put into the operating budget was the wrong way to go. It was no transparency. It was scattered all through the budget. Daily, we kept finding other places where they estimated the cost savings for corrections to be $4.2 million, different places like that through there. And at the same time, you know, they're showing that 40,000 Alaskans don't have insurance. Possibly 20,000 of those would sign up. My concern is Medicaid reform. Right now, Xerox, the state has sued them because of the mess that we have. The system is broken. We had to put a $92 million supplement in when we first got here this year because the state has been making payments to vendors to keep them afloat. We have lots of the people in Alaska that are providing services that have taken out bankruptcies because it's taken 6 months to a year to get a payment out of the Medicaid system. So the state's been supplementing it and paying. With that problem, until we get that straightened out, adding 20,000 to 40,000 more people into a broken system could make it explode. I really feel like before we can have Medicaid expansion, we have got to fix the system, or it's going to be a lot worse than what we're seeing today. I'm not saying Medicaid expansion is bad. That bill is going to make its way through the legislative process. It will be coming to my committee, and I'm co-chair of House Finance, and I'm interested to see what it will look like by the time it gets to us, and I definitely am going to give it a very fair hearing and a fair look, because it could be very beneficial to the entire state and individual citizens of the state. But we've got to fix, and I think there is a Senate bill on its way also that is to reform Medicaid, and we've got to get that system straightened out before we can add 20,000 people to a broken system.
Do you see a path to perhaps melding the reform ideas that Republicans have expressed in Senator Kelly's bill and the expansion desire of the governor into one bill that can perhaps pass this session? Do you see that could possibly happen yet this session?
I don't know for sure on that about melding them together. I would have to do some look and have a good look and have some research to take a look at to see if can they move together or not. I'm not sure on that.
Lori, I want to say that I think Representative Thompson has been absolutely right about the mess in the data processing and payment processing system. That's been ongoing for a few years, and I think there's been good progress made in the last year or so, and there's still work to be done, and that matters a lot. Nobody can dispute that. But let's be really clear. Reform of the services provided, rather than just the billing system, reform is an ongoing process and always a worthwhile goal. So we look to see it in every department. We're looking for efficiencies and cost savings. But it's a big mistake to hold Medicaid expansion hostage to reform and leave Alaskans, and argue the numbers, but you know we have several studies that show up to 40,000 out in the cold without health care. That's not okay. So what can we do with Medicaid reform? There are a lot of examples of savings, not just the correctional system that Representative Thompson suggested, but and the new federal money that would come through the system. But there are things that have been started and are moving forward, and that's, for example, using generic medications. Care management, which has to do with people who have very chronic, very expensive diseases like diabetes and hypertension. There's intensive care management for those people and also for the people who are expensive recipients of services. You know, the frequent flyers, the people who end up in the ER because their conditions are poorly controlled, and we can do a lot of savings by having concentrated services for those few people to keep them out of the ER and keeping their conditions well under control. So there's a host of suggestions that some of which have been implemented are in the process that came out of the Medicaid Task Force, which started meeting in the fall of 2010, and we're going through the implementation of those recommendations and continuing to look for those and other cost savings. It's important, and we should be always doing it, not just when we talk about Medicaid expansion, but it should be an ongoing process in everything we do.
If you're want to reestablish here, just give me just a second, Representative Thompson. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk of Alaska, and the guests today are Republican Representative Steve Thompson. He is in the KTOO studios in Juneau, and Democratic Senator Berta Gardner is on the phone from the Capitol. We're going to be talking about the budget. You can join us. Right now we're talking about Medicaid expansion. The number to call in is 1-800-478-8255, or in the Anchorage area, that's 550-8422. And yes, excuse me, Representative Thompson, please continue.
No, I was headed down another path there, so I'll slow down a little bit. But you know, the 4,000 new jobs. I mean, people are getting medical services at the present time, and I want to see some more reports. I've seen several reports on Medicaid expansion. Some are very optimistic with a lot of big dollars that the state will receive. Others are saying, no, that's not true. It's actually going to cost the state over here on this side. And when that bill finally comes through to finance, we'll probably have some better answers and have some sideboards put on this thing, possibly even some areas where that if the federal government decides that it's going to change from paying their 90%, the state could have some way to opt back out of it. It might be cheaper for us to buy private insurance for a lot of these people instead of going through this process. There's so many questions that are out there. I'll be very interested to see how this bill progresses, and I would like to see it get through this year, but I want to make sure that we're doing the right thing for the citizens of Alaska.
I just have another question along those lines, and I know there's a lot of other things to discuss in the budget, but it seems like there could be sort of a well, there probably is a philosophical divide about how this is seen from both sides of the aisle in Juneau. Palmer Republican Representative Shelley Hughes said that Medicaid expansion doesn't encourage people to improve their income. She said it's time for churches and communities to be kind and help those who are struggling, saying it's not the government's job to be kind. How do you see that idea? Is Medicaid expansion an act of kindness in your mind, or what's sort of the mindsets of Republicans and Democrats on how this is really seen?
Well, I'll jump in here, Lori. I want to say that, of course, there is always a role in every social issue for the faith community to be engaged and involved. And let me point out that AFACT, which is a group of 13 Christian organizations or religious organizations in Anchorage, have been working really hard to support Medicaid expansion. They feel that that is part of their mandate as churches, and they represent 10,000 Anchorage residents. So that's really critical. Yes, they have a role, and part of their role that they have defined for themselves is to promote access to health care. Representative Thompson said that he believed or he thought that many of these Alaskans who don't have health insurance are still getting medical care, and that is true. Many of them going to the emergency room, so we have hundreds of millions of dollars over time of uncompensated care that hospitals have to provide, and they don't just swallow all that loss. It gets passed along to everybody else who gets health care through the hospital. And a couple years ago, I saw a report that said everybody who buys private insurance is paying $100 or more for their own policy in order to help cover these costs. So we can agree that reform is worthwhile, but right now we have a limited window of time to take 100% reimbursement from the federal government and help Alaskans get access to affordable health care, and that's only for a limited time. That's until June of 2016. There's a lot of pent-up demand, so we want to make sure we get the maximum benefit. And also to the point about whether we can opt out, we have written confirmation from the federal level, the Health Department, and I forget the individual's name, saying that the state can accept Medicaid expansion conditional to the federal government coming through with their funding promises. So I'm really happy that Representative Thompson supports Medicaid expansion, and I understand he's guarded about that and wants to make sure that he gets answers to the questions that he have. That's absolutely fair. That's always true. You have questions, you hold a hearing, and I'm looking forward to those hearings and appreciate that you're doing it, Representative Thompson.
And please, Representative Steve Thompson, give us your thoughts on, is this the right thing to do? Is it what's the philosophical divide here? Is this an act of kindness? Is it something the government should be doing, or how do you see this?
No, I think it's I think it's pretty much a necessity. I mean, we do have so many people visiting emergency rooms and going into the hospital, getting services that you and I are paying for when we go to see a doctor or pay for our insurance or ourselves. The interesting thing that I'd like to also hear some people talk on is that the difference between Medicaid and Medicare. Most of our seniors are on Medicare. They retired. They have Social Security. They have Medicare through that. My other question is so we have several people trying to get in and see a doctor. He's got 10 patients here. Eight of them are on Medicaid expansion. They are going to get paid 90% to the doctor. I mean, that bill's going to be paid. The Medicare pays about 50% or less. So who's he going to see? How many seniors are going to be left waiting for services? I mean, that's a question that I haven't heard asked, but it's a true question because, you know, it's something that has to be asked also. And do the seniors really want to see Medicaid expansion? If it's going to take away from their Medicare provider for their services? I mean, that's something I'm just throwing out that I have no idea where it came from in my head, but it's something that I've been thinking about. Also, Denali Kid Care takes care of young kids. If a kid breaks his leg on the playground, Denali Kid Care is going to take care of getting that fixed. I have to admit, though, if he had to have an open-heart surgery without insurance of any kind, that's not going to be covered. Medicaid expansion would be necessary to try to get coverage for that.
All right, you're listening to Talk of Alaska. Our guests today on the program are Republican Representative Steve Thompson on the line with us from KTOO in Juneau, and Democratic Senator Berta Gardner is on the phone from the Capitol. We're going to take one call on Medicaid, and then we're going to move on to other budget items. Thank you so much for being with us. And on the line is Steve in Anchorage. Good morning.
Hi, how are you guys? Great show, by the way. Yeah, I didn't catch who was for or against Medicare expansion. But let me tell you something. There's two things. I was a ex-health insurance agent in the state of California, and now I get VA insurance. And the solution nationwide to our health insurance problem is Medicare, Medicaid for all. Health insurance companies are interested only in one thing, making a profit off everybody's health insurance policy. And when it comes to health, when it comes to something like somebody's life or death or health situation, it should be part of the commons. So I'm an expert in the field. I was licensed for 3.5 years. My job was to sell to self-employed businesses and show them how their individual policy that Blue Cross of California, for example, would cover them, how we could provide them with a group plan. It was much better. So I dissect everybody's health insurance plans, and that's the bottom line. And the solution to the problem of Medicare and Medicaid is funded better. It's very simple.
Are you talking about universal pay system?
Yes.
One payer system. So the lawmakers on the line with us, Representative Thompson, what are your thoughts about that? That's what the Affordable Care Act was originally planning to do, was to have a single payer system that got jettisoned. What would you think about a system like that where there's everybody's in the pool in the nation?
You know, I don't have an opinion on that. I haven't really looked at it and researched it enough to give a educated opinion. But you're looking at something like the Norway system, and that's where I believe what you're saying is along those lines. Norway, by the way, has like a 52% income tax to cover that. So everybody's paying. I mean, that's just not in the form of an insurance policy. It's in the form of over 50% income tax. So I don't know what that would do to our system or how we'd ever pay for it. So I'd have to know more about it.
Sure, of course. And Senator Gardner, do you want to comment on that before we move on?
I think that it's very important that everybody should have access to reliable and regular health care. We don't have a sort of national agreement on how to pay for it, as Representative Thompson said. So this is a step in the right direction where the poor and the working poor don't have health care currently except through ER rooms, which is the single most expensive way for them to get it. And consequently, this is a step in the right direction. And I think it helps everybody, keeps medical costs down everywhere. And we've also seen data that in states that have accepted Medicaid expansion, the increase, anticipated increase in health care costs generally is leveling out. They're seeing sort of controlled spending or even going down. So I think it just brings so many benefits. But whether it'll happen right now, this year, I'm optimistic. And I think that Senator Thompson has asked some good questions. He'll get some good answers. And maybe we can work together to make this happen. I'm sorry, Representative Thompson.
I was gonna thank you very much for the promotion.
You heard it here first on Talk of Alaska. Thank you. Thank you to my guest today, Republican Representative Steve Thompson and Democratic Senator Berta Gartner. We're talking about the budget. We're going to move on from Medicaid now. Senator Anna McKinnon said that lawmakers are turning over rocks looking for dimes, nickels, pennies. What's the criteria for projects that have funding either deallocated or reallocated? I'm talking about this idea of clawbacks, taking back funds that have already been allocated. What criteria are you using in this regard?
Well, I've worked pretty closely with Senator McKinnon, and we're looking at projects that never got started or that haven't been completed, that are not going to be completed, and we're looking at those dollars. How many of them, if they're from a certain district or a certain town, we're trying to get them reallocated to that community instead of pulling back. But there are other funds that we're finding that we're hoping to pull back into the general fund, dollars that aren't being used and there's no other use. And they're just sitting on the books, and the money's sitting there. So we're trying to pull a lot of that money back and put it back into the Treasury so that we can survive for a little longer, and hopefully our savings will last a little more. We're looking at a very small capital budget this year. We're thinking that I'm doing the capital budget on the House side, and we're trying to hold the capital budget to about $150 million. But a lot of that money is federal match money. Basically, we get a darn near 10-to-1 match with the federal government on highway dollars. $80 million of state money is going to bring in close to $1 billion in federal money. So we're looking at where can we leverage money to bring it up to where that we can gain from doing this. At the same time, we're trying to find and look at projects that are really necessary in health and life issues. There's not going to be a lot of wants given out this year. We're going to be holding it down pretty much, and it's probably going to be for a couple of years that way. And there's a bill up in the Senate, and there's also one that I'll be introducing in House Finance today on the House side on trying to limit school funding bonds. Right now, we're for a new school, it's 70% state, 30% community. We're trying to say, no, we're going to change that to a 50-50 to make the communities pay a little more and try to save the state some money. And we're trying to say, let's put a 5-year moratorium on building new schools so that we can get caught up money-wise. Right now, this year, I think it's $264 million that we're paying in bonds for some of these schools that we built in the last several years. So we're trying to hold that down because that's a big driver in our budget. So those are items that we're looking at. Where can we reappropriate some funds to take care of some needs in areas too? So there's a lot of that. We're, like you said, we're turning over every rock right now.
And Senator Gardner, what are the Democrats, what's your priorities and criteria for how you're looking for savings?
Okay, well, I'm going to agree with a lot of what Representative Thompson has just said. I want to say, in terms of what we do spend, we should have two other priorities. In addition to the leveraging matching funds, which, by the way, is part of the Medicaid proposal, we want to focus on health and safety, as he said. But we also need to take care of what we already have and finish what we started before we embark on big new projects. So I imagine that you'll agree with that. And I have a specific suggestion for the co-chair of House Finance, and that is that from my district, we'll be happy to give you back the $20 million that was appropriated for the UMed access road. That's the Bregaw extension. And my district absolutely doesn't want it. The community councils have passed multiple resolutions and affirming resolutions of their opposition. But more importantly, it's not enough money to do the job right. It's not enough money to meet the goals of the university. And even if it were completed, it begs the question about what do we do with the condition of the Bregaw portion of the road between the university and the highway, where there are three schools, traffic backups, poor drainage, all kinds of other problems that really should be part of it. So that was $20 million, and we'll give you back very happily the $19.6 million that's not already spent. And frankly, we can use it on budget priorities that we have a higher priority and greater need, including the, you know, priorities that you suggested finishing or focusing on health and safety and matching funds and stuff.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska. This is a continuing program on the budget. We're talking about moving on from certain budget items such as Medicaid expansion and reform and looking more generally at the budget now. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255 or locally 550-8422. And Harry is with us now from Anchorage. Good morning.
Well, good morning to y'all. So what I'd like to talk about is the absolute urgency that I feel is to deal with revenue in the budget. It's okay to look for savings, and certainly there are areas in the budget where you can find savings. But the amount of money that you'll lose from the $3 billion or so that you'll use from savings this year, the recurring revenue that comes from that each year is going to amount to more than the amount of savings that you're cutting. And, you know, I understand what a tough job you folks have. Been there myself, and I know how hard it is to get a long-term fiscal plan, but if there was one issue in the that the legislature needs to deal with, it's to end this boom and bust situation that we have with our oil revenue and our state budget, and get on a long-term fiscal plan that has some stability to it. So it's up to you.
I thank you for that comment. You know, that's one of our problems this year was we're trying to put together an operating budget. You know, a year ago, even a year ago, this coming June, oil was still up at $110 a barrel. Suddenly, we lost 70% of our revenue stream, and it really changed the whole dynamics of what we're looking at. We had, by the time the governor given us his finalized budget, we had about three and a half weeks to try to put together and look at and come up with something that didn't crash the economy. We reduced pretty equally through all the departments, and we're planning on this summer to have most of our committees and the subcommittees are going to be working with the different departments trying to figure out how can we right-size government. What have we done this year that was probably wrong? Or where have we got more room we can work on for next year? What can we do to streamline and make the government more efficient? And I think that's one of the things that we're trying to put together. At the same time, though, there's no question about it. We can't cut our way out of this. If we fired every single state employee, that means every DOT worker, every ferry worker, every state trooper, we would have $1.4 billion. We're $3.5 billion in the hole. So you can see the size of the problem we're looking at. So the conversation is going to have to eventually start. I know the governor in his interview last week talked about we used to have a school tax. The first paycheck of the year, everybody had a $10 held out to go towards schools. There's a possibility of a sales tax. But sales tax, a 3% sales tax with no exemptions, would bring in about $500 million. That doesn't anywhere near the 3.5 million. A 10% sales tax, income tax, 10% of what you pay the federal government would bring in about $500 million. So those two would just barely move the revenue blip against our spending. So we've got to figure out ways to do this. There's bills out there right now. I think there's a new fishing license, hunting license increase to try to cover more of fishing games expenses. House Bill 155 that I'll be introducing to it was read on the floor, House floor yesterday, introduced yesterday. House Bill 155 is a result of a bill that I introduced last year that made the indirect expenditures come under scrutiny. We had a report that was required, and it was done by the Department of Revenue, turned over to Treasury, and they did an in-depth report. We had identified in not all of the departments, but just the ones that we could get a look at, $500 million that we give away in reduced fees, tax credits, and we're looking at all of those. And we just introduced a House Bill 155 that is taking about 13 of these and reversing them, taking them off the books, and getting rid of those statutes. There's not a lot of dollars in these first 13, but there's quite a bit. And it's things like the state wrote a $330,000 check last year to the cigarette wholesalers in Seattle to put the state tax stamp on the bottom of a pack of cigarettes. Why isn't that included in the wholesale price? Why are we writing a $330,000 check to pay for that? We found a lot of things like that that we're working on, and it's going to be a process of going through and trying to figure out why are we giving money away? Why do we have reduced fees on certain things that we don't really need to? It was a good idea when we had money, but it's time to take a hard look at saying, hold it.
I want us to continue this portion of the conversation. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our guests on Talk of Alaska. We'll be talking more about the budget as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, human resources, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska, and I'm Lori Townsend hosting today. We're talking about the state budget. Our guests on the program are Republican Representative Steve Thompson, who is on the line from KTOO Studios in Juneau, and Democratic Senator Berta Gardner. She's on the phone from the Capitol. Former lawmaker Harry Crawford called in asking about how we're going to get there, and that raises a good question about what's the bigger plan, the longer term look at how we're going to stabilize the state. This approach of looking for pennies under rocks is somewhat like trying to put out a forest fire with a garden hose. And oil prices are low. We're billions in the red. How can we get the future looking brighter? This idea of a gas line is one that people are clinging to, but gas prices aren't where they would need to be to make this pencil out. What are some other ideas for getting us on more stable ground?
Okay, well, I'd like to start by, first of all, thanking Representative Thompson for his leadership on the indirect expenditures and reversing some of them that didn't make sense for us. You know, the state is an investing and participating partner on our oil stuff through our vast system of oil tax credits and different kinds of supports. And I think it's worthwhile looking at all of those, including the $700 million that we anticipate owing taking in oil tax credits this year or taking off our income. So I hope that Representative Thompson will help me look at those and also find out more about what they're for. But in terms of a fiscal plan, it is a complex problem, and we absolutely need a long-term plan. And that, I think, requires input from Alaskans. So when you talk about listening sessions and having meetings throughout the summer, Representative Thompson, I hope that you will consider broadening those to having a listening sessions and a statewide conversation. That's critical about how what Alaskans want to see in a long-term fiscal plan. That's, I think, the way that we have to start this work.
Let's go back to the phone lines now and get some callers on here. Dave is in Cordova. Good morning. Dave? All right, I guess Dave left us. So we'll take a caller in Juneau. James, good morning.
Good morning. Representative Senator, I wanted to ask about the state's revenue sharing program for municipalities specifically. The governor had proposed in his state of the budget, I believe it was $57 million for that program. And then when the bill came out of the House, I think it was $14 million for municipalities. And I was just wondering, with all these budget cuts, what's the role of that program? Is there space for it anymore? And will the money in that fund potentially be clawed back? Thank you.
I'd like to address that. Being a former mayor and being caught up in revenue sharing back when Governor Murkowski redlined the revenue sharing one year. Revenue sharing is so important, especially to the small communities in the rural areas. People don't realize that some of these small communities, their city budget is sometimes as much as 90% is the revenue sharing from the state. And if we do away with revenue sharing, there's a lot of those communities that are going to just take out a bankruptcy and close their doors, and the state's going to be sitting here wondering, what do we do now? There are no bankruptcy laws for communities. What happens to the city, to their assets? What happens to their buildings and things like that? It's a scary situation. Basically, every year it used to be $60 million would go into this three-year fund, and then $60 million we pulled out each year to do revenue sharing. This year there's $57 million without any funding going in to replenish it. That means that next year there will be $37 million, and the following year, $19 million, and then no money. We can't let that happen because there's too many communities that depend on those revenue sharing funds.
And that there is the voice of experience from the municipal level. I just want to say that we also support revenue sharing, and we recognize it, that the loss of revenue sharing disproportionately hurts small communities, but it hurts everybody. I think if we want to retain the revenue sharing program, we're going to have to look at oil tax credits, $700 million in this year alone.
If you're just joining us, that was Democratic Senator Berta Gardner speaking, and before that, Representative Steve Thompson. They're on the phone, on the line with us from Juneau. We're talking about the budget. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255, or locally 550-8422. And I want to return to the phones now for a minute, and we're going to talk to Wayne in Healy. Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning.
Do you have a question?
Well, I have a question. We're always looking for money, and I feel on the one of the ways that the state can help take care of our fish and game department is I have a few things here that might everybody has an opinion, yes, and this is some of my stuff that I'd like to talk about.
Did you have a question?
What do you think is going to happen about our fish and game resources if we continue on doing what we're doing?
Well, we've got a major problem right now with low returns on especially the king salmon in the state. And there's a lot of studies going on, and I'm sure that we could probably fill this room I'm sitting in with studies that have been going on. But we've got to get some results and find out why and what's going on and try to reverse that trend. I don't know if it's, we've seen a lot of reports about bycatch and the commercial fishermen are under attack and the sports fishermen are under attack and they fight back and forth, and it's not a healthy situation, but we've got to do something to ensure that the fish industry in this state continues healthily. It's a tough situation that we're doing here.
Senator Gardner, did you have a comment, or should we move on to some other questions here?
It's interesting because I agree with what he said, because fish are vital, not only culturally, but to our economy and a way of life that we value so much. So the heart of it is, I think, using science and then having good policy that springs from the science to protect fish stocks. And I guess that would apply for other game, too.
A few moments ago, we were talking about Senator Gardner raised the oil tax credits. What's the sentiment in the legislature right now about looking at those oil tax credits? I would imagine that the industry is concerned about that in a time of fiscal instability in the state. Are you hearing from the industry about how they're responding right now, both because of the tax credits are in place, but also that's juxtaposed against these low oil prices? Are they planning to lay off workers? Are they planning to upgrade what they're doing in the fields based on the tax credits? What are you hearing from industry leaders?
Well, we had, like Senator Gardner said, we had $700 million in tax credits that it cost the state this year, way above what was expected. We were expecting to get about $400 million. Those tax credits are going to small investors, to small exploration companies, to small producers. This is what SB 21 was set up to do, and it's working. They are out there doing their work. They are putting people to work, and we're going to see some results. And it's amazing that majority, over 50% of those tax credits are Cook Inlet tax credits. So that part of it sunsets in 2017. So in next year's budget alone, we'll probably see maybe $350 million instead of $700 million. And the following year, we probably won't see any of those tax credits. But they're working. We've got reports right now that haven't been made public, but there's another find a little south of Prudhoe that looks like it's going to be the third largest pool of oil discovered forever up on the slope. I mean, it's amazing that things are happening. And that company said that they would not have done it and put in their $3.5 billion in investment if it hadn't have been for SB 21. So, you know, if we were under ACEs right now, I think we'd be in a negative revenue instead of positive, because SB 21 was set up to where on low prices, we still had a revenue that comes in. On high prices, I have to admit, SB 21 would have cost us, compared to ACEs, several $1 billion probably in lost revenue. But on low prices, the timing was just right for SB 21 to kick in to help not make sure we're in a negative situation.
Senator Gardner?
Oh. Okay, well, I'm going to push back a little bit, but start by saying we're all disappointed to hear about recent layoffs, and we're also unhappy that we haven't seen increased productions, because employment and production was supposed to be the hallmark of Senate Bill 21. We will applaud that ConocoPhillips is moving ahead with Kuparuk, even as there are layoffs on the North Slope. But in terms of ACEs, you know, there's always a balance between protecting yourself at the low end and participating in the high end. And that's what ACEs did. We didn't protect ourselves at low prices, and we anticipated sharing very strongly in the high prices when they happened. Senate Bill 21 kind of takes away the upscale for the state to a great extent and does a little bit more to protect at the low end, although I'm not sure that the figures that were being given about Senate Bill 21 being better include the $8 a barrel wellhead credit. So there's always room for improvements, but the bottom line is we get no part of the windfall profit sharing, or very little. I mean, negligible point of that, and that's the trade-off.
As far as employment goes, though, in Fairbanks this summer, we had, you cannot believe the amount of rail car loads of drill stem and pipe and equipment that was headed to the North Slope. I mean, it's been a booming year. Repsol, Armstrong have employed literally hundreds and hundreds of people up on the slope. There's a lot of activity going on and things happening. SB 21 just got, you know, through the process of a recall vote in August. People are just starting to say, okay, we are now going to go ahead and invest in this next pad, in this next drilling. But when you drill and you find something, it takes 3 years at least before it gets into the line. They've got to build the infrastructure and the piping and the whole system. So we can't expect it to have SB 21 pass in the next month, have oil flowing. It doesn't happen that way. It takes a couple years, 3 years, once they have discovered it. It takes a couple years to get the permit to drill the hole even. So it's going to be a little while before we see those results, but I'm very confident that we are going to see a lot of results out of that.
1-800-478-8255 is the number to join us on Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the state budget with Republican Representative Steve Thompson and Democratic Senator Berta Gardner. 550-8422 is the number in the Anchorage area. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org, which is what one listener did, and wanted to ask a question about diversifying the economy, finding new revenue sources. We talked a bit about that earlier, but I'd kind of like to back up to that because we are seeing that low oil prices probably aren't going to jump back up anytime soon. As I said, the price of gas right now is low, too low to justify the effort that it would take to build a gas line at this point in time. I realize that's a long-term investment, but the prices are hovering at about $3 or $4 right now, not up to where they would need to be. We're looking at a possible deal with Iran over nuclear development. If that happens, there was a report today saying that they will then, once sanctions, if sanctions get lifted from them, that means more oil into the system. And they've got 37 million barrels in storage right now. What are we looking at to get through this kind of herky-jerky cycle of boom and bust so that we can get ourselves on more stable ground? What are ideas for diversifying the economy and finding those new revenue streams?
Berta, you want to start? I've got some things too.
Well, our one of our big hopes is a gas pipeline, and I believe that although it is not a done deal, there is nothing that's in concrete or steel yet, shall we say. I think that we are further along with that and have good reason to be more optimistic than we ever have been in the past. So that is a big hope. I think I'm supporting the governor and his move. I think we're moving in the right direction all the way around. So that is our hope. And we have affordable gas for Alaskans. That helps. But it also brings the opportunity for more gas-based businesses as well as export markets and things like that. And small businesses we're looking for, pharmaceuticals and fertilizer and things like that.
Representative Thompson?
I think a gas line is our future hope, but the gas line, if they get all their permits, if they get all of the Army Corps of Engineer permits and everything in place, and then they order the pipe, we're not going to see that completed until somewhere between 2024 and 2027, which we're broke. We can't have that long of a wait. So we have to look at what are we going to do in the meantime. We only have so much savings. 2 years, our savings is going to be gone. What do we do then? The only thing that we can do is start looking at alternate forms of immediate revenue, and a lot of people don't like to talk about it. But one of the things that we're going to have a lunch and learn there in the Capitol Building 106 on Thursday is David Teal has an educational presentation that he shows so that people can really get a picture of where we are financially and what will happen with small increases in revenue that don't really bend the bar between expenses and revenue that much. And one of the things that he's going to have that's very interesting that people don't even like to talk about, but it's the fact that the permanent fund dividend, the permanent fund reserve savings account is not the permanent fund. This is the revenue savings, the earnings reserve account has got $7.8 billion in it. It's not part of the permanent fund. We have to look at what we can do to take and have a little bit of that money to supplement our budget, to extend our savings a few years. We're talking about this gas line. We have got to have some money in the bank to pay for our portion of that gas line if we want to maximize our returns. If we own 25% of it, we're going to end up seeing 40% of the revenue coming to the state of Alaska. If we don't have that available, all we're going to be able to do is let it be built. We won't have any controls. We are not going to be at the table to see that the state is protected, and we'll just have our royalty and maybe a small amount of production tax coming off of gas. So we've got to look at all avenues of revenue to try to carry us through these times. And you're right, the storage of crude oil in the United States is already over 80%, approaching 87%. There's one company in the lower 48 that has leased a tanker, using it as storage anchored offshore because they have no more storage in their barrel or in their storage tanks, and that's going to keep prices down and could possibly drive them a lot lower. I've seen reports that said somewhere to $20-$25 a barrel oil. If that happens, boy, we're in real trouble.
We're going to take a short break and talk about maybe the forbidden word taxes when we come back as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the trail. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the state budget today with Republican Representative Steve Thompson and Democratic Senator Berta Gardner. And I must say that I really like this bipartisan, respectful tone between the two of you. I think maybe our national congressional leaders could learn something from the way Alaskans work together. I wanted to ask a question about a plan that was announced by then Governor Palin in 2009 to get 50% of our state's energy from renewables by the year 2025. Is this still a consideration? Is this part of what you're looking at for the future of how we're going to look for other ways of stabilizing the economy and helping to promote new business? Cheaper energy means that you can grow businesses. What's the idea along this plan that was put into place for renewables by 2025?
Well, Steve, I don't know offhand what's in the budget for that right now. Can you tell us?
Not without having it in front of me here. I know that there's a lot of research being done by the University of Alaska trying to look at different ways to get energy to especially the rural areas. They've got a liquid metal battery that they're looking at that they've been researching. They're looking at nuclear batteries that can be buried in the ground and will last for 20 years. They've got all kinds of items that they're looking at to where we wouldn't be using fossil fuels in order to reduce our expenses. And we've got to be able to continue to look at those type of items. There's been a lot of wind generation built in Alaska in the last 10 years, 5 years. And I think that's probably a lot of it. But that doesn't really save us as much money because the wind doesn't always blow, so they've got to have their complete generation on diesel as a backup. So they got to keep it maintained and there. So that's we have to keep looking and trying to come up with ways to do things. It's an interesting process that we have that we're reaching out and trying to find the magic bullet.
Well, let's talk.
Excuse me, Laurie. If Harry Crawford were on board online still, he could tell us everything we wanted to know about wind energy, at least in Anchorage. But the question about 50% renewables and that goal, which has sort of fallen by the wayside, I think, in the wake of particularly our current fiscal crisis, but it leads into an important thing, and that's something we haven't talked about as a state, and I think where it's past due, and that is climate change, because we are beginning to see the impact, not just globally, but on our own budgets. We have a firefighting season that starts earlier, sometimes is more intense. We are moving villages and moving them again. We are rebuilding seawalls. The storms are fiercer and hitting our coasts in ways they didn't used to because the ice pack isn't forming or is further out and isn't protecting the shores. You don't even have to go to coastal Alaska to see that. I mean, you could see parts of the Mat-Su River banks just being eaten away because of water flow. You know, and some of that is ongoing, but we're seeing the culmination kind of change that continues that brings in new flora, new fauna, and there may be opportunities in the climate change, but we really need to study and understand much more about what's happening because of the impact on our budgets currently and because of what's coming in the future and how we might be able to find some benefit there too.
I think that we could have a whole program on climate change's impacts to the budget, and that might be an appropriate thing to do in the near future. We only have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to get to one more aspect of revenue and the state, and that is to look at the issue of taxes. Mary is on the line from Glen Allen, and I think she has a question about state income tax. Very quickly, Mary.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I just wanted to put a quick word in for income tax and school tax and then to ask you a question about it. And the quick word is we're pretty fiscal conservative people. We lived here before 1980. We paid both an income tax and a school tax. And we felt like that was a fair way to be able to tax people who came into the state and worked here. It comes off your federal taxes in some way. I don't remember how, but I trust the state political system and our needs for infrastructure more than the federal at this point. So I like the money going to the state.
Okay, we have about a minute left. Can we have a question about state income tax? Would you like to?
Okay, the question is, can that be on the table? I know that it's politically dangerous for politicians to even breathe the word, but there's a lot of people out here who might support it. So.
All right, we have 1 minute. Can we get an answer? Let's start with you, Representative Thompson. What are your thoughts on a state income tax?
From what I've seen from the Department of Revenue's projections, a 10% income tax, which would mean 10% of whatever you pay the federal government, would raise about $500 million for the state, which does not come anywhere close to helping us on a $3.5 billion deficit. But it's something that we could use in combination with a couple other things that might turn that curve a little bit and help us. So I think everything has to be on the table. It's a dirty word. The T word is not supposed to be used, you know.
And Senator Gardner? Your
okay.
thoughts quickly.
I say the three steps are first, take care of our own house. Expand Medicaid. We know there's cost savings. Stop paying oil companies to produce our oil. And then have listening sessions with everything on the table.
That was very succinct. Thank you so much to our guest today. We had a lot of calls we didn't get to, but we got to some of them. So thanks for callers. Thanks to our listeners. And thanks to our engineer, Dave Waldron. On the phones, Josh Edge. Thanks to our guests, Representative Steve Thompson and Senator Berta Gardner, on the phone and the line from KTOO in Juneau.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska Pacific University is a private liberal arts and sciences university that emphasizes student engagement with the social, cultural, and environmental issues in Alaska and the world. This message sponsored by APU. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.